the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network, where the opinions of our guests do not reflect the opinions of the hosts. My name is Joey. I'm here as always with Len in the other panel. Buddy, what's going on?
Everything's good. And thank you everyone for joining in. It's been a great episode and you'll see us on Monday. So take care TV, everybody. All is great, Joey. The weather's fantastic. We got two amazing guests here. We're going to talk about an awesome topic, the acceleration theory. We haven't yet dove into that here. It's going to be a very subdued, very focused discussion. And I want to talk about it and learn a little bit more. I'm sure everybody also is in the same opinion as me. They want to learn about it as well. How are you, Joey?
I'm great. I just came from physio. I tried to make it back here for the show. I was successful in doing so. I'm drinking a beer here, which I never do on a Wednesday night. Because I think this is going to be a cosmic discussion. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to bring our guests on. We'll talk about where we know them from and all that in a sec. First of all, the sponsor, EasyDNS, the best, man, place to host your content. Uncancellable, you already know that. They got a lot of stuff going on there. You can move your email over there. You can host your domain there. If you want a virtual private server for your BTC Pay server, for your Nostr Relay, any of that stuff, they got you covered. Plus, man, it's a pain in the ass to move emails and stuff over, to move content, to move all that stuff over to another place, another hosting provider. Mark and the team over at EasyDNS will help you with that.
They can accelerate the process for you.
They will accelerate it for you. And when you use the code CBP Media, or just tell Mark we sent you, you get 50% off your initial buy, which is pretty good, man. So, Len, with that said, I'm going to let you do the introductions here. Here we go. We can bring in
Ragnar from Mordor. And we also have Jared, who happens to be an author, somebody who written a piece very recently about the acceleration theory. And that is going to be the topic of our discussion today. Gentlemen, how are you?
Pretty good. How about you, Len?
Living the dream. Ragnar, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, as always.
You guys are always welcome. So this is good. Well, before we dive deep, Joey, looks like you have something on the tip of your tongue you want to get out.
This is live.
With a 30-minute delay, so don't worry. You guys could really...
Yeah.
I got the dump button.
The coach's corner delay. No, so the only thing I really want to start with, maybe before we get into the acceleration theory thing, which has been a hot topic on this show, even though I don't really know exactly what it is, maybe talk about how you guys met each other and maybe where we know you from. Because most of the time we bring on guests... there are people from the space, you know, people running companies, people doing all this stuff. You guys are not those things. And all the same, we think you got something good to say. So tell me a bit about yourselves first.
Start with Ragnar
here.
Yeah. I can see the person that actually has the video on. So we can
apologize for that as well. I'm having some technical difficulties at the moment.
Yo, you're in physio, Joey?
I was earlier today, yeah.
What were you working on?
Hammy today, buddy. Hammy today.
The hammy. What happened?
Man.
Too much sprinting.
proximal tear. I'm trying to get ready for that conference, buddy. If I'm not ready to go against all the comers,
the chirping is going to be off the charts.
I know. I got to be ready. So
when okay, you tore okay, it close tell to, like, where the butt is.
Yeah, proximal. Exactly. It's a shitty place to tear it.
That's not what
Ragnar,
you want.
Ragnar, how do you know this information? It sounds like you're very.
I just
well
told
versed
him.
In this. No, but he's very well versed into this.
I can't divulge my fiat mining profession, but let's say I know one or two things about, you know, what our mutual friend here, Joey, is going through.
Understood.
Anyway, I go by Ragnar on Twitter. My pronouns are Excel-erate. I'm a proud member of the LGBTQ plus 21 million group. And I think before we start, it would be very appropriate to have a land acknowledgement. So I'm currently on the Ojibwe tribe's land. So I'd like to shout out those guys there. And then we'll carry on. But Jared, we had a Bitcoin meetup. How did I meet Jared? We had a Bitcoin meetup somewhere in Southwestern Ontario. Jared shows up, just totally, you know, steals the show with a lot of energy. And you could tell that, you know, he was or is a, you know, Bitcoin pleb for sure. We've had a few Bitcoin meetups at this place, but like Jared just kind of came, you know, you see some people, you meet some people, whatever, but Jared's one of those people that you meet and you will never forget. And he comes with the energy. He's not very old, which is like super, super impressive, because most Bitcoiners I would say are like, you know, at least 30, 40, that kind of thing. They have a background in macroeconomics, but like Jared is just a polymath. So it was very obvious that he understood Bitcoin, and we kind of hit it off from there.
I appreciate those kind words. Yeah, pretty much what he said. We met at a meetup. He was presenting, giving a presentation. I just walked up to him.
That's when I was decelerating, when I was trying to teach people Bitcoin. That was my quintessential decelerationist behavior.
Just started asking questions. They added us to a group chat, which you guys happen to be a part of, and that's how I met you guys.
Good stuff. Yeah. And Jared, talk a little bit about how you stumbled into Bitcoin, because I never heard your story, and I could hear it right from the horse's mouth.
So I heard about it in 2017. I'm just like, you know, number go up kind of thing. Just thought of it as an investment. Kind of forgot about it because when it went back down, everybody stopped caring about it, lost the media attention. And then right when I turned 18 in 2020, my dad started getting into it, and he gave me the Bitcoin Standard. I read that. After that, I was basically hooked, started consuming all the content I could on the subject matter.
What exactly makes it appealing to you? I'm curious, because you're a younger guy, and you look at things differently than I guess the three of us do. I'd like to hear what are your thoughts. What makes it so appealing to you?
I'd say it always had a rebellious spirit, never very trusting of the government, never had a very good opinion of authoritative figures, I guess, let's say. So what the appeal for me was separating money from state, basically. Have rules without rulers, more personal freedom. That's kind of what stuck out to me. And that's what kind of gave me the passion to go so far down the rabbit hole, not just, you know, I put a couple thousand dollars in and maybe I can sell it in a few years, get more money out. Like once I became attached to that core philosophy, it really gave me something to believe in, and was definitely impactful on my life.
I love it. This is good stuff. Now, Jared and Ragnar, you are here to talk about one particular subject, and that's the acceleration theory. Now, before we dive deep into this, Jared, you wrote a piece recently. Talk about it. Talk about what it is and where people can find it. I posted a link on the YouTube description, and I'm sure Joey's going to put it on the audio side of things. But just pump it right now and talk what it's all about.
Okay,
and
then we can dive deep into it. I published it on Substack, and how this all kind of came about is when I first started becoming friends with Ragnar and you know, some other Bitcoiners in our local area. You know, going out for dinner and drinks and everything about once a month. I think about a year ago, it started coming up, this idea that, you know, if we want hyper Bitcoinization to happen faster, we should be voting for Trudeau and all these liberals who make woke policies that like are obviously absurd to us. But if you really think about it, that's how hyper Bitcoinization is going to happen, right? Like, You vote for like the conservative side. They'll backpedal things, or they might endorse Bitcoin. But at the end of the day, it's a politician. They're trying to get votes. They're only really co-opting Bitcoin because they have a large group of diehard supporters that if they co-sign Bitcoin, they think they'll get those people's votes, but once they get into power, you know, inflation might go down a few percents, but it's not really going to enact any sort of change. I think the system's inherently flawed. And if we want real change, the best way to get that is voting in policies that will actually make things worse in the short term, and in term in the long term will cause a reset, and things have to get bad before they get better, right? So I think a reset needs to happen. The collapse of fiat is what I mean. And for that to happen, the best way to do that is to vote for like leftist politicians.
Yeah. And so Jared, you said it right. There is no fixing the system within the system. That's very obvious. I think if I'm going to add anything to that, the biggest, and I would start from this. What is the biggest risk of like Bitcoin failing? What is the biggest risk of Bitcoin going to zero instead of becoming money? And the biggest risk to Bitcoin that, that I've stumbled upon is actually people not understanding that Bitcoin is the shelling coin. It's not understanding the game, like that there is game theory operating like on a zero principles level in the world, because everyone's opinion, everyone's worldview is so obfuscated and confused that they've forgotten that, you know, they're so like tantalized and deceived by the state and how like people operate their lives abstractly and how they live like completely ungrounded lives. And they think that, that certain, you know, the state exists and, you know, they pay us and there's, you know, the debt-based system. And they're so obfuscated and confused by clown world that they actually have totally been detached from reality, which is game theory, which is just humans competing against each other. So the biggest risk to hyper-Bitcoinization is people actually being too stupid to realize that Bitcoin is the next shelling point of where civilization is going. And it's going to be the new grounds of competition, commerce, communication, exchange of information, all these kinds of things. So the best way to make sure people realize this is to accelerate all of the things that actually make their lives harder, right? So whether it be groceries being too expensive, you know, their kids being taught really edgy things in school, violence in the streets, I'm not condoning that, but like, you know, in like in the United States, there's a lot of like and more of like the blue sides of the blue states, there's a lot of violence there and shit happening, and people are like, hey, well, I'm leaving this and I'm getting out of the big cities and I'm going out into, you know, a red state in Texas or whatever. But people have to learn by the lived experience, and the best way to do that is to accelerate the you know, the hardships that they're currently experiencing. Anyway,
okay,
this is my opinion.
Okay, I like this take. This is a good, so I posted the article on Twitter just now and I posted it in the chat too for people who are listening, watching, not that anyone listening, watching needs to know where to find it. But the thing that we talk about on the show a lot, and I want to hear what you guys think about this. The problem with Bitcoin isn't necessarily people don't realize it's the sort of the next pivot point. The problem is that as things get worse, people are less likely to have either the resources or the bandwidth to explore other options because the day-to-day minutiae becomes so taxing, both from a financial standpoint and from a you know, an available mental resources standpoint, that they can't find this stuff. One of the things I think all of us have in common is that we're intellectually curious. And I would also venture to guess that, you know, like Preston Pish says, a lot of Bitcoiners are net producers. You know, we all got a little disposable income to throw at something like this. Even if you don't fully understand it, you know, there's something there and you'll turn that stone over eventually, whether it's immediate, you know, or not, it doesn't really matter. But for people who are having problems, aren't you guys a little worried that acceleration theory will drive people away because there's just no opportunity for them as things get crazier and crazier to find time or resources to dedicate to this? Or am I missing that?
No, I'll take this, Jared. No, it doesn't. They don't really matter. The only people that matter for hyper Bitcoinization are the bond normies and the people who manage like tens of billions, if not trillions of dollars. They are the ones who need to experience the pain. The thing with like worrying about other individuals is that that's actually coming from like a collectivist sentiment where you're actually like, you know, worried about what other people do with their lives and how they see the world work. And you almost like feel bad for them. And that's just the everyday mom and pop people. I get it. Like they're having a rough time. My parents don't get Bitcoin. I try to explain it to them. Aunts and uncles don't get it. Lots of people in our family don't get it. A lot of regular people, the normies, don't get it. And unfortunately, like so that's basically, if you look at it from a zero principles level, it's never evolutionarily advantageous to any species to ever put energy, like Jason Lowry says, to ever put like energy or resources into people who are, as you said, not like net productive. And it's not a value judgment of saying some people aren't productive, therefore we shouldn't give resources to them. It's saying there's an open world here and you are allowed to compete for the resources and we all have to do it because it's the only way of like determining who can own what. You can't abstractly, you know, say, oh, well, these people don't get Bitcoin and they got their mortgage and they got like three kids and they're having a really tough time. And, you know, let's just like feel bad for them and print a little bit more money just to kind of help them out a little bit more. That is not going to exist on on the Bitcoin standard. So it's not that I'm saying that we shouldn't care about these people, because like obviously humans care for other people, and it'd actually be weird not to. You'd have to be a little bit of a psychopath, because you know we're all one species and we want to work through things together. But the fact of the matter is that we're so far deep in clown world, we're so far deep in like the abstraction of money printing, with like the abstraction of all these rules, to the point where people are dyeing their hair blue and actually getting like you know weird changes to their body. They're getting sex changes or whatever. Like that's not really a normal thing, but it's becoming normalized in school. That like it's almost like the species itself, humans, almost have to let those individuals carry on in their clown world, and then you know and then accelerate how crazy it is for the people with significant purchasing power. Because it's for hyper Bitcoinization, it's only really going to take like a few billionaires, right? Because Elon pumped the price from like 30K to like 45K in 2021 or whatever. Now it's just one billionaire. What happens if a few of them get on board, right? The price is going to skyrocket. Normies are going to figure it out. They're going to shitcoin, whatever. But like, but the fact of the matter is that like the acceleration is really for, you know, the people with a whole shit ton of purchasing power to be like, what the hell is going on here? We need them to get rugged by banks to say, oh shit, all those billions are actually there. It's literally worse than monopoly money. I need to go to the shelling point of the next thing. And acceleration is pretty much the only way to teach them, because they're happy with how the current world works. I mean, Balaji is a perfect example. He learned by acceleration theory because he's a pretty intelligent, smart guy, whatever. But he only realized, oh shit, the system's broken, when they rug pulled Silicon Valley Bank or whatever it is. That's when he was like, oh shit, Bitcoin, right? It's that moment of like, oh my God, I get it. You can't teach that. You can't reason with it, because, you know, these people are smart and they can use all the logic in the world, but they need the, oh my God, I don't want my purchasing power going to zero that I worked on so hard my whole life. But anyway.
If I could add on to that, I would say that once we're in hyper Bitcoinization after the collapse of fiat, the only people with enough resources to reallocate capital to starting new businesses that aren't distorted by governmental policies where they're printing so much money that it doesn't cost them to produce it. So they can just throw money into bailing out things that would not be economically viable otherwise. So when people that have a proven track record of logically being able to allocate their resources in the best way are starting new businesses, the people they'll be hiring are going to be people that lost all their valuation. And now they're going to be like, oh shit, like I lost all my money. Now I'm getting paid in Bitcoin. I heard about it years ago and I dismissed it. But you know, once they start getting paid in like energy money, they're going to realize pretty soon, this is a whole lot better. Like, what was that other system we were using before? This is a whole lot better. And they'll learn that through instinct. Like you were saying, Mark, zero principles. I don't think we explained that yet. You just brought it up briefly, but maybe you could go ahead and explain that to all the listeners, because you're the one that coined it after all.
Zero principles.
Yeah, zero and first principles. Maybe go over that, because I think you coined the term, didn't you?
Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a sec. Do you guys want to go anywhere else with this?
Joey has a follow-up.
Yeah, I want to ask one thing. All Caps, who we all know, is in the chat saying that this is maybe putting people in harm's way, promoting harm. I don't know how I feel about that. If I had to guess what your response would be, it's that your view is that these people are going to harm themselves anyways, and so why waste resources trying to pull them back? Francis Puyo would probably say that, like, this is part of the sort of remnant theory, right? Like if you're having to water down the message in a way that speaks to people who just don't get it, then the message is not really going to resonate and carry and be worth it anyway. And so I don't know if you guys have a stance on sort of this idea that you're just going to let people harm themselves, participate in the decline, like kind of, I don't want to say let it happen, but really you're giving people, you're putting people in front of the steamroller, right? Like, you know what's going to happen, and you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, or if you feel like it's unavoidable. I'm not sure.
I really like what you just said there about the steamroller, because I was thinking of this analogy in relation to a train, but I'll use a steamroller now. Let's say you have a steamroller going and there's five people like tied to the ground. And then there's another one with one person tied to the ground in another direction. and you don't have enough time to turn the steamroller, you can only turn it either to...
So Bush League, unbelievable.
Yeah, so you could either keep going and run over five people with the steamroller, or you could turn direction and you'd have no choice but to run over one person, right? Like, that's how I see hyper Bitcoinization is. Like, yeah, people are going to get hurt in the process, but allowing fiat to continue operating will hurt way more people.
It's running over 100. It's like, pulling the lever to continue running over 100 people instead of going to instant hyper Bitcoinization and maybe running over five. But it's not a choice. That's like, this is what people kind of get lost in the sauce a little bit. It's not like a value judgment or a choice to say, we need to like have people learn through pain. It's the fact of the matter is that whether you like it or not, people are going to learn through like their lived experience. There's just absolutely no way out of this mess other than completely through. Anyway, shout out to Bitcoin All Caps. Love that guy. He followed me back. You know, we had a little breakup.
He's a good Bitcoiner, man. Like I appreciate when he says something. There's not a lot of people when they speak, I listen, but you know, he's one of them. He's been around long enough and has, you know, he's seen a lot of things. And so I try and, anytime he, you know, he raises a concern about something, I think it's valid, you know. And I should say there's no cut and dry answers in any of this. Like you're talking about people's livelihoods. You're talking about the, you know, the collapse of a longstanding system and the rise of something that's going to be, you know, volatile and different and difficult for a lot of people, both in terms of understanding and in terms of adoption. And so, you know, finding black and white answers is not going to be easy, but that's part of the, you know, part of the process. Anyway, Len, what do you got next?
Well, Ragnar, you were saying that the system is already to the point, I mean, just paraphrasing here, that it's screwed up to the point that they can't fix it. The debt that has been accumulated publicly and even the unfunded liabilities, it's so much, there's nothing that can be done to fix it. No matter who's in charge, it looks like that it's going to be inevitable that this thing will collapse and a reset will be upon us, regardless of who's there. Now, if you believe that to be true, then does it matter which path we choose? Choosing the deceleration path would probably lead to less people being harmed and also give them more of an opportunity to learn about Bitcoin. What would you say about that?
I'm pretty indifferent. So the way I would answer that is that if you ever try to have some kind of interventionist, like intervention into, you know, having a controlled demolition of quote unquote, like the state, and you are going to try to kumbaya transition to a Bitcoin standard, like you are basically becoming the statist and you are becoming the problem that Bitcoin is trying to get rid of. So if I were to explain this in like a story, I would just reference Atlas Shrugged and John Galt. If I know a lot of Bitcoiners have read that book. Have you guys read that book?
No.
I've heard a lot about it from you.
So people should, it's like probably the best book I've ever read because it's actually a story. So it's fiction. And basically, just long story short, there is a gentleman who basically invented an engine that would basically, it was an engine that would just run on itself. So it was like an infinite energy engine. I forget the actual
perpetual motion machine type thing, right?
Yeah, he invented that. And like, so what happened is he invented that. And then all of like, there's all these parasitic characters who are basically, you know, sucking blood out of the productive class, who are the people who are the coal miners. They operate train stations. They, they mine for nickel. They build trains. They build engines or whatever. And then he saw, so he's like Satoshi. He saw that like these people were just stealing from all of the productive people, right? So what he did is he invented this engine and then he gave it to no one and disappeared. And he found a few groups of people that were actively trying to get the people who were holding up the system, who were holding up like the fiat clown world, to just stop participating in it little by little and just like exit the world. Because the only way you can actually get to like the Bitcoin standard is by having people like elect to exit the system. And it's not saying I'm not going to show up to my job tomorrow and I'm going to protest. It's a very amazing technology that Bitcoin is, because you can just dollar cost average as your vote to in order to exit the system. So in terms of whether deceleration, you want to be a decelerationist or accelerationist, I would read that book. It's a lot. It took me a whole summer to read, but it's over 1,000 pages, so it's very long. But Ayn Rand puts she doesn't even realize she's an accelerationist, but she puts out an incredible argument for why acceleration and not deceleration, because the decelerationist behavior actually propagates the system and continues the malignancy to actually spread throughout the rest of civilization, right? Because fiat's a mind disease. Fiat's something that people don't, you're in the matrix. You don't realize you're in the matrix, and it doesn't matter what anyone does. You're never going to be unplugged because you participate in it. You take your kids to the school, you buy the groceries, you watch the TV, you buy the bonds, you do the fire investing, and you'll never get out of it. Like there's no decelerationist path where you can hold people's hands and explain to them why Bitcoin. There's no politician that can come in and save us and say, hey, why Bitcoin? Unless maybe you're at the bottom of the barrel in El Salvador, but that's a different situation. I don't want to get too
no run that. With that. I want to hear more of this thinking, because clearly like that is one status/politician that has adopted it, and as you mentioned, they're bottom of the barrel, but he does fall within the classic definition of a politician, and he has accepted Bitcoin, adopted Bitcoin, and doing all the right moves, in my opinion, with respect to Bitcoin. So run with that, because I don't want you to gloss over this one too much.
Over Nayib Bukele?
Yeah. How come somebody else can't adopt his mentality, even in a first world Western civilization?
This is the way I would look at it. So Bitcoin... Actually, this is not everything I say is not just me. It's other people that are in the chat that we talk to. But Bitcoin is a very bottom up phenomenon. It's not really a top down phenomenon, because the wolves at the top of the hill are not hungry and they can continue, you know, manipulating the system and getting all their stuff using how the current world works. And it's going to be the people at the bottom. So El Salvador and other countries like that actually sit at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. So they are the global socioeconomic ladder, like the global situation. So if you're going to put United States at the top, El Salvador would come in somewhere at the bottom. So it actually is, on a macro perspective, the bottom, and it is kind of like a bottom-up revolution there. The reason why Bukele, in my opinion, I'm a fan of him, and part of the reason is because my dad comes from like a Central South American background, so like I understand the struggles that a lot of people go through who live in those countries, with like gang violence, and basically the government and the gangs are the same exact thing. It is here too, but it's different because the government and the gangs here project abstract power and they psyop you. That in some of the Latin American countries, they like will like do very, you know, debaucherous, I don't pronounce that wrong, but they would do very, you know,
violent methods of inflicting their rule.
So they're, yeah. So anyway, I would actually say Nayib is more, I wouldn't even say he's a statist. I would just say he is a classical statist, whatever, like he is like got voted in, whatever, democracy, but he's actually more of a monarch there than anything. He's more of a king, right? So when you have people who own a certain land, they are the monarch of that land, then they feel responsible to nurture that land, to make sure the people are satisfied, to make sure that you don't corrupt the soil, all these kinds of things. But when you have other countries like democracies in the G7 and other countries like that, you have people who the whole point of the system and that they live in is designed to high time preference, steal as much as they can from the net producing people and give it to themselves. Where Nayib's a little different. He kind of has a lower time preference. He's more of a totalitarian king archetype. And again, that can go good, that can go bad. I would be more on along the lines of actually being like prefer decentralized distributed monarchies than I would centralized democracies on a Bitcoin standard. And it would just happen anyway. And the reason is because in Bitcoin, you can fail, right? Like you can do something wrong and you will lose your purchasing power if you decide to spend all the money mining like shit from mining Bitcoin from volcanoes and that ends up going to zero or whatever. You can't steal what isn't there. Where in like fiat land and the G7 and that kind of thing, it obviously all started at around some time in 1913 when you had the British issue the war bonds and it didn't get subscribed. So they said abstractly, well, we're going to make this entity that doesn't exist buy these bonds and we're going to basically start the Ponzi right here. So the difference between what Bukele's doing is that he's existing more in the proof of work realm. And then the statists here are 100% peak proof of stake. So again, to summarize the Bukele thing and why I'm not pro or anti Bukele, but kind of like I see the plight he's under and I respect what he's doing is because the gang violence in a lot of these states are actually very, very terrible. And you would have,
zero property rights there because of it.
Yeah. He's cleaning up his backyard basically is how I would look at it. And I don't really like when Bitcoiners get, oh, he's just using it as a ploy to pump himself up or to kind of put him on a platform. I think their situation is completely different compared to ours. And I guess using my own logic, he would be a quote unquote decelerationist. But if you look at the macro landscape, he's at the bottom at the pecking order. So he's actually an accelerationist by putting pressure on the bigger states to have to, you know, compete against a country that can literally go from nothing to having what 300 or 500 Bitcoins on their balance sheet. And Bitcoin, you know, has a giant pump to like 300, 400, 800K. Next thing you know, the US is like, fuck, like, now, or the other countries are like, shit, like we liked when they were on the bottom and we could project our abstract power on them and make them use our tokens, but like shit, now we gotta compete. So to me, it's like a bottom up thing. Bukele's he's using the state. It's the path of least resistance to him to use the state to kind of, you know, to be the king or emperor or overlord or totalitarian or whatever elderman that he's being there. But anyway, I would say that I'm more pro Bukele, and he is like a macro accelerationist from his what he's doing from one position. If I talk too much, just tell me to stop.
No, run with it.
No, no, yeah, I
roll downhill. Okay, so the question I have for you guys now, Jared and Ragnar, it seems to me that you guys think, you know, Jared, I won't speak for you, Ragnar, because you know you didn't write the thing, but I get the feeling you're on the same page here.
Well, he was my inspiration, so.
Oh, even better.
So okay, you're a disciple of Ragnar. That's the way to.
Yeah, it seems to me that you guys, you guys at least agree, or you guys agree that, you know, anything that is decelerationist is the term you guys are using, is bad for Bitcoin because it slows down the collapse that would open eyes that are otherwise just not going to be opened by a slow decline. When I look across the landscape of politics and economics, I think that there's two games being played, broadly speaking, by first world governments. One is sort of this information withholding game where stuff like, you know, Federal Reserve communication strategy, for example, I think is a good way to frame this. You know, these guys get on the mic basically 5 days a week, every weekday of the month now, to try and tell you what's coming next, to try and reassure you, even if they don't know. And I truly believe they don't know. And then the other piece of this is, I think there is some, you know, and sort of in the same vein, I think there is some understanding by first world governments that the collapse is coming and that anything that looks or feels too fast will be irreconcilable for the majority of the public, productive or otherwise. And so are you guys worried at all that governments sort of have you figured out already and that there just isn't going to be an opportunity that they're going to hand to you or to us, I guess, as Bitcoiners, to hit the streets and say, look, it's all happening so fast now. You can't miss this. This is exactly what we were talking about with acceleration theory. It seems to me like they know when to pump the brakes. They always pump the brakes at the right time. And for most people, that's enough. Do you have a thought on that? You know, are these guys already a little bit ahead of the curve or no?
That might be more the sense for more conservative politicians, but I think as far as the left goes, like, they're so incompetent. People give the government too much credit there. Yeah, there's corporations and other like interests like that that are more competent, that have a bigger say in things, but the like actual people in office aren't that competent. I think they're just very self-absorbed, narcissistic people. It's a nepotistic system, and they're just gonna keep doing whatever instantly gratifying behavior gets them the most money in the short term, right? Like, however much money they can make in office, whatever backhand deal they can give to their like crackhead son Hunter Biden or whatever, right? Like, you know, they're just doing it for short-term gain. They don't really care what happens after they're gone, because they can just go to they can just fly to their private island if shit hits the fan, right? Like,
so okay, so Jared, do you think that you're saying then that any pumping of the brakes that seems to be well timed is purely coincidental? There's no intention there. There's no pre-planning. They don't think that this thing is collapsing, yeah, and they just need to slow down a little bit sometimes.
They encroach on your rights. I was just making a point to say that they're less competent than people give them credit for. But yeah, they encroach on your rights. Once they get pushed back, they slow down. Then they start up again. You know, it's like a frog boiling in water, right? Like, once the temperature gets too hot, the frog notices something's going on. It might try and hop out of the water. So they try and balance it like that. But what we're kind of arguing for with acceleration theory is we should be voting for these leftist policies, these woke ideologies, all these kinds of things that will cause hyper-Bitcoinization to happen faster.
I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I still don't, it's not that I don't think you're right. I think that the more, and we talk about this all the time, that the group of people, like the group of citizens that will vote for those policies is growing as a result of the policies being voted on by more people. It's this incredible flywheel. And
yeah, it's a follower effect. Like,
exactly. It just keeps expanding, right?
Right. The people adopting last don't use logic. They see everybody else is doing it, so they follow suit. It'll be the same way with Bitcoin adoption. Like, the early adopters that set up all this infrastructure, they're the people that understood Bitcoin from first principles. They use logic and reason to understand it. Once they got attached to this idea, they dedicated their time to like building the infrastructure for it, right? The people that are adopting it later will be following suit once, because of the groundwork that the early adopters did. So what we need to do is make it so that things get so bad in the land of fiat that they feel they have no other choice. They won't decide through logic. They will be carrying wheelbarrows of cash in to buy their groceries. And the only way they'll find work where they can acquire anything of value will be working for businesses that are paying in Bitcoin.
Let me add one more thing here, and I want to hear your take. I'm gonna play devil's advocate here a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely have a devil's advocate.
To me this makes a lot of sense. But if I look at what's happening, it doesn't shake out. And the thing I'm thinking about right now is, you know, if there's any measuring stick that tells you whether or not people think they can make a change that's going to affect their lives in a positive way, or whether or not people think that the system is beyond saving, or whether or not the people think they should put even the minimum effort into trying to change the direction of society, it's probably voter turnout. And what I see in most of the modern world is voter turnout is at an all-time low. It's lower every year, every election than the one before it. Short of the, you know, firecracker live wire candidates like Trump, you get less and less people even caring to go to the ballot box. Hell, during COVID, they let you mail one in and still a bunch of people didn't do it. And so I'm wondering, like, if you see that indicator and people still don't seem to understand that the whole thing is falling apart, or maybe they don't care that it's falling apart, then what is the thing that's going to push them over the edge? It seems like people are already hopeless and lost and apathetic. No one's over the edge yet. So why not?
I don't think they see that the problem is fiat, right? Like, You could equate it to Plato's cave allegory. So like early Bitcoiners, we went outside the cave. We saw a more objective version of reality. We saw not just in shadows, but actual light, 3D objects and everything, right? And then you go back into the cave and you don't have the language to properly describe what you just saw. We can't really use language properly to articulate to people what Bitcoin is. So the only way that they'll understand it is once this system falls down and Bitcoin is the only thing left standing. It's like Noah's Ark, right? And the people that are already using that, they'll see them using that. They'll see, oh, this works. And they won't really have a choice. Like, yeah, they'll get fucked over, but I don't think there's any other way that things can go. I don't think we can use language and reason and logic to educate 8 billion people about why they need Bitcoin. Not that many people fit the archetype to get behind that ideology, which is what drives everybody, I'd say right now, who identifies as a Bitcoin maximalist.
Well, I just want to add one thing. And Bitcoin really is going to replace the monetary system. And it's going to... It's really not going to change anything to do with the political system. There may be some changes, so to speak, but an overhaul probably is not going to happen. You're still going to have a group of people that are going to be governing their constituents. If you look at anywhere in the world, whenever there is an overthrow in a government, there's a power vacuum, but that vacuum gets filled up almost immediately. And so I can't see there's anything different happening over here. So there would be probably some continuity with the government system. Sorry, go on.
To that, I'd say that what propagates major nation states that have basically been world dominating powers for the past 20 centuries is that they're able to print and debase money. And that's how they fund their means of ruling, because it's power projection, right? They print money to spend on their armies. And once they inflate, they all collapse. Like every single civilization or empire has collapsed at some point. We think it's not going to be any different for us, but that's not how it's going to work. We are going to collapse. And the only thing that they use to project power is basically printing money, controlling the money, and that's how they pay for their armies. Once a nation state is in control of the monetary system and we're using something not controlled by humans like Bitcoin, the only way governmental structures will be able to work, the way I see it, like from the thesis of the sovereign individual, will be small city states where, you know, it's complete capitalism. One city state, you know, a million people can try one thing out. If it doesn't work, people don't like it, they leave. If it doesn't work, it fails, people move to another one. They won't be able to propagate large, like nation states as big as the ones we have right now. It'll be
government no longer scales, right? That's the,
It will certainly change the way the government operates moving forward. And they're going to have to govern and operate in a way with more fiscal responsibility. Because if you're working in a hard money assets or hard money system, they can't just print away their problems. They have to adhere to the money which they have adopted. So one thing I think we should be looking towards fighting, or maybe that's not the correct word, to try to not bring into existence, is a paper Bitcoin. And what I fear moving forward is as governments, as these central banks topple over and they adopt something like Bitcoin, they're going to try to implement a paper Bitcoin similar to what they had paper gold. And that's the one that really scares me, because when you do something like that, you give the ability then to manipulate the system and then just follow the same path which we walked down to this point. And history tends to repeat itself. That's what I see, and that's what we should be fighting. And I'm sure how we can do it, but that's the one thing I fear the most, is that we're going to go through this whole exercise but still end up in the exact same place we are right now.
Normies are begging for it. That would only happen if normies don't get accelerated to the point where they're still begging for government intervention, right? That's with acceleration theory. You don't actually have that problem. But things get so bad for people where they're like, "Holy shit, I can't believe we just trusted government with like everything. Fuck that. I don't want them to use their paper Bitcoin or like shitcoin. I understood the problem." People need to have bearer assets and being able to communicate value transfer and communicate information between people at a base layer or some kind of second layer or solution, but not like an inflatable derivative of it or some IOU. Joey, you were, so what was your first question that kind of led to this tangent? You basically said something about like governments. You said they seem to be like pumping the brakes at the right time.
They seem to be like, yeah, like they, like they're sort of wise to your game, right? And you know, it's not your game, so to speak, but they're wise to this idea that there is a collapse coming. They know this. I don't think that's really even debatable. I believe that most modern governments understand
this collapse coming.
I think they do. Yeah, I think they do.
So you mean the Klaus's? This is where
the entities controlling the people representing the government.
You could say whatever you want, right? It's sort of the royal they know. Someone knows. It's not a mystery, right? Like if you look across all first world governments, especially these days with inflation and printing and all this stuff, what do you see? You see the same policies that have always been taking place, except now they've kind of gotten away from them. And most other times in history, the response to something like this would be, you know, military or communication being cut off. But now all this stuff is too difficult. So what they're doing instead is sort of rolling downhill, pumping the brakes right before things get too out of control. And it seems to me like they're doing it in a way that makes sense if you're trying to avoid acceleration theory, because you're right. Things are nuts for a lot of the world. And, you know, you're talking about, sometimes we're kind of insulated here between America and Canada, but if you look over in the UK, you know, their finance minister in the United Kingdom talking about pensions will only be allowed to buy certain stocks and assets pretty soon to basically bail in government debt, talking about price caps and groceries. You're talking about, you know, not being able to heat your home in the winter, things of this nature. Somehow they've managed to convince those people that things are not bad enough that you need to look for a way out, to opt out, like some people in the chat are saying. And so I'm wondering, like I'm curious now, right now, like, what do you think about that? Is that legit? Is it not legit? What do you make of all that?
Well, doesn't that just prove that acceleration theory would work?
It's not about whether it won't work. I think it'll work. It'll work for us, whether or not you have like a situation where you're in dire straits or not. You start buying Bitcoin, you realize like, oh yeah, to your point, why do we trust governments with money for so long? Why do we trust them with the economy for so long? Why do we trust them to kind of pervert the nature of asset valuations for so long? You don't have to be at the far end of the curve of acceleration theory for you to make that realization. But some people will have to be there. And it seems to me like that curve is getting pushed out more and more and more. And it's almost got to be on purpose at this stage, I think. I don't know if you have a different opinion on that.
I think fiat restores reality. Go ahead, Mark.
So everything, I think that everything you're saying is quite accurate, but where I would just add a point is that I don't think that the government or the people who are, you know, letting things kind of get crazy and then they stop it because they know people are going to get aggravated as a result of these things. I don't think that they know that Bitcoin is actually the like escape hatch for all of this energy. They don't actually realize it's the shelling point of where everyone's going to go. I think that they're just scratching and clawing at maintaining their abstract power for as long as possible. And they actually don't give a shit what happens to anyone or any normies. They just want to make sure that enough of them are satisfied with their current status behavior that they will keep them in the position of abstract power for the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years or whatever. I don't think there's any conspiracy that a lot of people in, for example, the WEF or in the Biden administration are anywhere close to even understanding that Bitcoin is where all of this energy is going to end up. It's where all of the stored time and energy that we've been amalgamating for the past like 10,000 years of civilization or however long you want to extend it back to. They don't realize this is the next thing. They are actually in the matrix themselves, and they actually believe that abstract power is the best way to what Bitcoin is basically a mechanism to determine chain of custody and an authority over resources. Like Jason Lowry just says, they actually think that the way you determine who owns what is abstractly. Like, they're still stuck in the post-Christianized world. So before, like, Christ, which in my opinion would have actually started the time of like Socrates and Aristotle, when they were, you know, playing with the world of the images and the forms, they were toying with logic. That's actually the beginning of like Christianity, that kind of thing. Before that, humans determined who owned what by projecting power and by killing people or by fighting, or by not necessarily fighting, but like imposing, hey, this is our army or this is our guys. Don't fight us because there's going to be blood. There's going to be bloodshed. Right. So if you look at even just animals in the wild, a lot of them don't necessarily fight each other because they know that the fighting can end their life. So there's always got to be some kind of balance of, you have to be incentivized enough to go fight against these group of people or these animals that are basically subduing you to the point where you can't even get your basic needs met. So the reason why I'm saying this is because back before like the 2500 year BC, that'd be 2500 years ago, so 500 BC, 600 BC, whatever, you would have basically you'd have like men grow and, you know, they'd create an army or whatever. And if they started imposing upon people too much in a city or whatever, you'd have the city revolt, and then they'd try to go kill the king or whatever. And then all the power would be redistributed. So the king or the individual who was controlling the area and controlling the resources and had the gold or had the grains or had the beads or had the rice or whatever, they got corrected by the free market. Right. So that's how. So one second. So that's how people would determine who owns what pre 2500 years ago. For the past 2500 years since Socrates, we have been living under what's called the ascetic ideal, which is the ultimate psyop of believing that, you know, there is no zero principles to reality. There is no might is right. There is no meritocracy. All of our problems and all of our disputes can be determined through logic and reason and being able to discuss and discourse, because we are virtuous creatures that are beyond our meat suits, and we think with our minds, and we are beyond the flesh. So you have a whole cohort of people who have been bred over the past 2500 years to believe that the way we determine who owns what and how we organize society is by rationalizing and having discourse and having politics and having laws and all that kind of stuff. And yes, I am I agree that there should be discourse and there should be reason and logic and all that kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is that people have denied the fact that, like, at base layer, the way people communicate is with energy or with power projection or with like people having their own individual desires or wants or needs. But we've gotten to the point where the individuals in power right now are so psyoped by the ascetic ideal, are so psyoped by their own reason and logic. They're so far deep in the matrix that they don't understand that, like, humanity and civilization is going to have a reset where people start communicating through zero principles and not like first principles of reason and logic. So Bitcoin is actually like a technology that allows individuals to like take up arms and like it's the way I would describe this is it allows people to insulate themselves from the God King or the J Daddy or the Macron or whatever status that's gone absolute batshit and crazy. It allows individuals to insulate themselves and to protect their time and energy. And I love this analogy. So basically, when you have, you know, the dinosaurs running around, the dinosaurs never insulated themselves by being endotherms, right? So they never increased their own body temperature and expended the resources that they consumed to keep their body temperature at a certain level. They would rely on the sun's heat to keep them warm, right? But as soon as the sun goes out, I'm not sure whether like dinosaurs are a psyop or not, but at least the story makes sense for what I'm about to say. So when the sun goes out and you have literal reptiles who don't have that giant light in their reptile cage, their body temperature will drop and they will die. So that, so being an endotherm is a technology that allows you to insulate yourself from the environment, changing temperatures. And it is a power projection technology where you are consuming resources and consuming energy in order to protect yourself from other sources. So the way I see Bitcoin is a way for individuals and corporations or large or small countries or whatever to insulate themselves from the end of a 25-year abstraction that is about to stop. And people are going to realize that you have to protect your resources and you have to protect your time and energy. And the only way you can do it, this is 72 software, the only way you can do it is by, like, you know, in the modern day is by adopting the Bitcoin state, by adopting Bitcoin, which would be denying asceticism, and it would be denying having abstract laws at the base layer of how humans operate. So the long story short is I don't think these people understand that. I don't think many people understand that. The statists don't get that. So they're going to get their cheeks clapped by Bitcoin. They're going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe that I actually have to go do something, or I have to like chop wood, or I have to like consume energy. I was just like being a parasite and consuming everyone else's energy, because that's what literally almost all of our institutions are, whether it comes down to healthcare, whether it comes down to media, whether it comes down to government, like all of our in banks, obviously, all of our institutions are designed to suck the blood of others instead of, like, you know, actually be a net producer or like provide value somewhere. So these people have no idea it's coming, but, you know, I'm sure I don't even think the bond normies are going to figure it out. I think they're too stupid. I think it's going to be the energy people, and I think it's going to be the war people. So this is why I don't understand why Bitcoiners like lose their mind at Jason Lowry, because like Bitcoin is an insulation defense technology.
Separate the theory from the person.
They don't say, okay, like, but all you're doing is protecting yourself from an abstraction gone crazy. Like, that's what Bitcoin is. So the people who are going to figure this out from zero principles, not first principles, are going to be the energy people. They're going to be the nuclear people. They're going to be the engineers.
They already are the people.
It's going to be the war people next. And like, I think that the trying to teach bond normies fucking basic math has been a failed thing. I think trying to teach fire bros and finance bros basic math is like a failed thing, because they're so stuck in first principles. They're so stuck in reason and logic. They're so stuck in their world of abstractions that has been manifesting itself for the past 2,500 years that they don't even realize that they're in the matrix. So if you go to people who actually get like the zero principles, or if you have people learn through the hard way by putting their hand on the stove, that's how you're going to get hyper Bitcoinization. You're never going to get it through trying to teach people. Only people who have enough lived experience, they read enough books, they have like, they were hunters, whatever, they see an animal die, they've had their asses rug pulled by shit coins. You know, only people who have had these lived experiences and a decent amount of like intellectual capacity are going to get, oh, that's why Bitcoin. But everyone else, they're going to have to learn the hard way. And that's just a fact of nature, right? Like nature, like so Bitcoiners are like antibiotic resistant bacteria. When you take an antibiotic, 99% of the bacteria die, but the 1% lives, right? And the whole reason that works is because the 1% had some gene mutation or whatever that allowed them to propagate their genes throughout the rest of the bacteria history. And the Bitcoiners will likely be something similar, or the people who like are understanding, fuck, I'm going to insulate myself with this technology for the rest of my life. They're the ones who are going to get it. They're going to have the resources, whether we think it's a good thing or a bad thing. This is just nature correcting itself in a new meta of cyberspace. And I guess some kind of like singularity between humanity and tech. But anyway,
I've always compared Bitcoin to the obelisk from 2001: A Space Odyssey. To what he just said there, the like symbiotic relationship, the combining of tech and humanity.
It's hard to argue with a lot of that stuff, yeah. But
there's a lot to argue against.
Well, it's because we get it, right? Like this idea, you know, to the points you guys have been making. This idea that Bitcoin is insulative, you know, defensive technology that keeps you away from the nonsense of, you know, as you mentioned, first principles, fake first principles thinking, is really not that hard to figure out if you're a Bitcoiner. It's funny, all caps in the chat, and I don't want to, like, I'm not all caps attorney or anything, but he's making a good point. He's making the same point that I made, which is why I think it's a good point. I think that the most politicians are faking it. It's a smokescreen. This idea that they don't understand that power projection is the most important thing is a lie.
They don't want to give up the power that they have accumulated to this point. Any adoption of Bitcoin means that it's going to be.
But JDaddy doesn't even need nukes. He just psyops you. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's way more powerful.
But by giving up the ability to control monetary policy, it's giving up a heck of a lot of power. And that means that there's going to be a lot of lean years ahead before you come out potentially ahead, or you may come out behind, depending on how things play out. And the way the system is set up in Canada and the United States is with 4-year cycles. And with that in mind, there's no long-term strategy that can be put in place because you're always looking to win the next election. It's not like in China where they have a 100-year plan. Here, a 4-year plan is all you care about. And by doing so, you can bankrupt future generations to make the current generation look good. And that's a perfect way of using the fiat system. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way of doing it. I'm just saying it's a tried, tested, and true method. And by adopting Bitcoin, they lose that advantage. I think they understand it. I think they understand what Bitcoin is all about and adopting it, what it means. I just think that they don't want to give up that advantage. It's very powerful to have the US dollar as the global reserve currency. Giving that up, there's a lot you're giving up by doing so. So I'm not sure if you want to add to anything there, Joey.
I don't want to add anything. I have to hop off because I have some other personal matters to attend to this evening. But
Can you guys hear me? I changed my headset.
You sound great.
It's been a long one.
I mean, we can wrap it up. So maybe.
What? We never got started.
Our interviews don't tend to go that long.
There'll be other Corn Lords appearances. Don't worry. Okay. There's other people who listen to this show who don't want to listen for more than an hour. So you're gonna have to cut it here. The last thing I'll say, and you guys can answer maybe this question, Landon, I don't know if you want to add anything on top of this, but what do you both think is the next domino to fall in acceleration theory? What's the next thing that's going to wake up, you know, that's going to be a big eye opener for the average, you know, bond normie, as you say there, Ragnar? what's the thing that's going to shake their castle a little bit?
The bond normies they're going to lose their mind when, for example, and I'm not really the best at finance math, shit kind of pisses me off, but basically when they see inflation still going up and the Fed has started cutting or whatever it's called. So when the Fed starts lowering interest rates and they didn't beat their fight on fiat, PSYOP, CPI, then that's when bond normies will be like, oh shit, right? Because that's the lived experience for them. They're like, oh fuck, it's a Ponzi. Because they think it works. They believe it. Like, this is what they do their whole life. They've lived off the fiat Ponzi for the past, since 1970, basically. You can have a smooth brain, you can be a monkey. All you have to do is buy treasuries and you sell them later and you win. That's Ponzi 101. So as soon as they realize that their Ponzi game is over and they're hungry hippoing and they're pressing and trying to get the marbles and there's no more marbles left, then they're gonna be like, oh shit, I'm still hungry. I have all my I have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that these boomers can eat their crickets into their retirement, and they're gonna have to buy the corn or else the boomers won't get crickets. I don't know what to say.
Jared, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, sure. I'd say I'd see the money printer speeding up, as with the way things are going right now with the Ukraine or China and BRICS and everything. Once America's kind of left in the dust and the rest of the world is ditching the petrodollar, they won't really have a choice but to speed up the money printer to fund whatever social programs they want to do, right? So also you could look at it from the aspect of all this woke ideologies popping up. If you think about it, just in the past 2 months, there's been the Bud Light thing, major sports organizations pushing it at their games, at the Blue Jays games, things like that. People aren't happy. If they even speed that up just 20% in the next year, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people. And just another way to accelerate.
I love it. So listen, I got to tell you both, okay, thank you for coming on, first of all. I appreciate you giving us your takes on this. We're going to have you back on because there's more to talk about. Now, I'm sure that you're going to, you're going to keep writing. I'm sure Ragnar will keep inspiring you. You know, you guys are both really saying a lot of things that make a lot of sense, and it's difficult. I know this. It's difficult to keep saying these things to people, especially people you care about, your family, your friends, you know, maybe your wife, your girlfriend doesn't get it, you know, quite the same way you do. But it's important all the same. And Jared, I want to give you some dap because, you know, it's hard to put your name on something that you've written and put it out there for people to critique, criticize, and you know, really take to the cleaners. It takes a lot of guts. And so I'm glad you did that.
He helped me edit it. He approved it first. So I guess that gave me a bit of a boost there.
For sure, man. For sure. It's all important stuff. And so I hope you continue doing it. Now, boys, you got to tell people if they want to follow you on Twitter, which they're going to fucking want to follow you on Twitter. Where can they find you?
It's on screen right now, JaredWeber21. From my bio, you can find my Noster and my Substack.
Beauty. Right there.
Hopefully an article every month.
The only person I want to follow me back is C Funk. Otherwise, everyone else can fuck themselves.
I'm gonna unfollow you then.
Celia's not in the chat. Maybe I'll put in a good word for you there. I talk to her once in a while.
I'm totally kidding. I just a lot of people unfollow me because of like the accelerationist takes, but a lot more people do follow. Like, but I don't really care. Like, whatever. I just vent on Twitter. Whatever.
That's what it's for. God bless everyone. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Cheers, everyone.
See you next week.
Cheers.
Yeah. Take care and PV.